Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
You are now listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 8, hosted by myself, The Last Skeptic. Today's episode features Heems, formerly of Das Racist and now of Sweatshop Boys, and my brother, Tin and Duyeb. As always, this podcast is super fucking sweary, but today's episode was not recorded at night and there is no booze. Whoa. Shout out to Seb White for recording the show, and big up yourselves for listening. Enjoy. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 8 of the Thanks for Trying podcast, hosted by myself, The Last Skeptic, with super very special guests today. We have Heems and my actual real life brother, Tin and Duyeb. What I wanted to say is, obviously, we were just chatting, testing the mics a minute ago, and something very interesting came up, Heems. Good old friend of mine, old pal Heems.
Old pal.
Something new that I didn't know about you. So we were just chatting and you said, my brand. Why don't you explain it?
My brand is basically eggs anytime, like a bad restaurant.
Does this mean your Twitter avatar is like a difficult thing? Because if you just have an egg.
Yeah. I should go to the egghead Twitter thing at this point. I think it's
you should just change your icon to an egghead.
After you get like a lot of followers, you should do the egghead more instead of like, you know, the egg always being like a person with like 3 followers that just yells at you about Donald Trump on the internet.
Yeah,
like after you get like enough followers, you should go back to the egg. Try to make the egg cool now.
Hashtag reclaim the egg.
Reclaim the egg, man.
Welcome back home, I guess.
Yeah, thanks for letting me live in here on your couch again. This is like about the
It's pretty much everything happens in this room. So yeah, well, welcome back to
sleep in this room and rap in the other one. It's kind of my.
It's like an instant rap.
And I make eggs in the kitchen. So those are the 3 spaces I occupy on this floor.
It all happens. And you're here this time with Sweatshop Boys.
Yeah.
So I think just maybe, you know, we won't crazy promo. I ain't gonna fucking drill you like, you know, interview and stuff. But why don't you just break it down real quick what Sweatshop Boys is?
It's an Asian thing, yeah. So my mate, yeah, he's from Wembley, and we did a rap group because he's British and Pakistani and kind of comes from a similar like working class background but is in the arts, and that's Riz Ahmed. And then myself being, you know, Indian and in New York, we kind of had these parallel experiences of diaspora and kind of always looked across the pond at culture and at diaspora culture. So we made a rap group, and our album came out about 2 weeks ago. It's called Kashmir. It's on our own imprint, Customs. And yeah, been shooting a video out here, so that's been cool.
Yeah, because you shot the first part of the video last night, right?
Yeah, it was just mad young, like, Asian youths and, like, sports cars.
Sick.
And, like, drones. So let's see.
Sick. That's very cool. Yeah. The album is amazing. Like,
it's really good. Before we recorded, I was telling Heems how one of my favorite tracks is Half Mogul, Half Mowgli, and he goes, "That's the track I'm not on." I was like, "Oh yeah, yeah."
Sorry about that.
I should be the type of guy that just like lets it go, but I'm like, yeah, the one track I'm not on.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Great. Sorry, man. Thank you. Appreciate it.
It's great. My presence is still felt no matter what. I'm omnipotent.
It's like you were there. Yeah. I sort of imagined you were in, like, at least just, you know, nodding along or just like, you know, you were there somewhere.
I was there in spirit for
That's
sure.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly. So, Taylor, tell me about what's going on with you, because I haven't even spoken to you in at least, like, you know, a week.
Yeah, in a whole week. What's happened in a week? I had a cold. Oh, shit.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
It's
kind of going around.
They do Lemsip, honey, and ginger now, so that's
so you don't have to do it yourself.
Exactly.
You don't have to, like, cut up the honey and squeeze the ginger.
Exactly, man. They've even made bee mucus synthetic, so I'm bang up for that.
Sick.
Yeah, that's what's happened since I last spoke to you. No, I don't know. I'm writing a new show. Oh. And
not for Edinburgh.
Yeah, I think so. I've got some tour dates for next year. I'm trying to hopefully might do New Zealand Comedy Festival next year and then Edinburgh. Hmm. So yeah, all that kind of shiz.
New Zealand.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You get to finally fucking visit Hobbiton.
That was my plan, and then try and mingle in. And if they do another film, I'm there.
Shit.
It's my secret plan. It's Hobbit and Ewoks. There's still a chance. Mm. Hobbits. I think I've missed my chance, but if I can try my best.
You have to get Tolkien to write another book, though.
That's it. Or just tell Peter Jackson to find like a 2-page thing that Tolkien wrote, and he'll make it into a 7-hour film over 12 parts or something.
Because how shit was Hobbit, man?
It made me so angry. But The Hobbit is such a tiny little book.
I know.
And then he's like 2.5-hour films. Like, man, that is a lot of filler.
That is one thing, I think. Like, if a genie gave me 3 wishes, like...
This is a huge waste of a wish, whatever you're about to say.
No, I think it's very valid. I think it's a really important wish.
You're going to waste a wish on some, like, white nerd shit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One of the wishes would be that they didn't make The Hobbit a 3-part film.
Yeah.
Man, you see, you've wasted this, like... I would have gone for like Spider-Man 3 not happening, or you know, or something a bit more worthwhile.
Okay, that's my second wish.
Yeah, second wish. And at the end, people were like, "Why didn't you wish for world peace?" You're like, "Mate, look,
no,
the Hobbit's better now."
Because there was a Punisher film that happened that needs to be unwished.
Oh, don't be mean to Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah, sorry, that is some nerdy shit.
Dolph Lundgren was in the Punisher.
Yeah,
was he the? No, he wasn't the Punisher.
He's in one of the. Oh, maybe there's more than one Punisher.
Thomas Jane was the Punisher.
Oh, I think there's an earlier Punisher film that's Dolph Lundgren. He's definitely a Punisher somewhere.
There you go.
Maybe just in his mind.
you watch Marvel.
I'd use a wish on having watched The Lord of the Rings or read it or any of the Marvel shit, so I would have understood what was going on the last like.
Wait, you've never read Lord of the Rings. You're a well-read guy.
Film is where I know nothing. I haven't seen any of The Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or The Godfather.
Wow.
Wow.
So are you going to have to, because Riz is in the new Star Wars, are you going to have to see that one or... Because you won't get any of it.
I haven't seen 4 Lions yet. I guess I gotta watch that too.
Yeah.
No, I don't actually. I only watch like bad Indian movies and romantic comedies.
Yeah. Wow.
American romantic comedies and bad Indian movies that I find to be good.
What's your favorite rom-com?
I mean, I'm very fond of Hitch. I'm on the record as a fan of Hitch.
Hitch is good.
You know.
Which is real.
Is that that's a Will Smith. Superhero one?
Will Smith. No, that's
Hancock.
Maybe. Oh, yeah, this is the other one with an H, that's just one word.
Yeah, that's also Will Smith.
I thought you were about to say the superhero one was Blade, because I often have in my brain somehow put Blade and Hitch together. Oh. So they're like 2 sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
Except in one he kills vampires, and in the other he's a love consultant.
That sounds like it could be a film to me, though.
Yeah.
Like, I think you should pitch that.
Just put them together, but...
He can only go out at night. She's only around a day.
Yeah.
That's something, but, you know...
Yeah.
They have to meet at Twilight, like, oh, no, Twilight, fuck.
Yeah.
Oh,
damn.
Third film.
Yeah.
That's a really good film. Well, I mean, I fucking love rom-coms, but, like...
There's not enough vampire murdering in them, so when you bring in the blade...
There's not enough vampire murdering within. Yeah, no, I agree. Like, really horrific, you know, blood from the fucking ceiling, like, all of that shit, like they did in Blade. I thought Blade Trinity was sick, actually.
I think he was too old by the third one, and he was, like, very slowly kicking vampires.
I just didn't care about the other characters. Like, they always do this thing of, like, it's a superhero film, and you go, great. And then they go, here's all these other guys that help me. I don't want... It's like, in fact, it's like when certain rap tracks, when they've got guest star, and you're like, what about the one person that's whose album it is. Why are they only saying three things?
Well, there's a lot of posse cuts that even though there's... I mean, it's not like Scenario where you would wait until the end for Busta Rhymes. But it's like, you know, there's certain ones, even like Monster, everyone takes the piss out of Jay-Z's verse on Monster, right? Because he just lists monsters. But like,
Actually, that's... Now that when I know that's what it is and I think about it a lot, but when you're, like, just hearing it like that, you're like, whoa, maybe that is kind of cool and not just funny. Like, maybe that's good. He just lists monsters.
Sasquatch.
I bet though it's the way he sounds while he's listing the monsters. It's not just the idea of listing monsters is fine. Listing is great in rap.
Yeah, let's
but it's him going ghoul kind of type. There's like a feeling to it that's like ghoul goblin. He's like he doesn't say it like a normal.
Was it like
dude.
A Halloween release? Was it like a special?
No.
Jay-Z likes monsters, man. I mean, that's pretty much it.
But who doesn't? They're great. They've got universities and shit.
That's true.
Yeah,
good point.
Brilliant.
Incorporated companies.
Absolutely. Exactly. Monsters, they're doing pretty well in today's capitalist society.
Ball. That's another film.
Yeah, they've got a ball.
They've got a ball.
Absolutely. Yes. I feel like I just want to say that in Scenario you do wait for Busta Rhymes, but also who's that? That's one of my favourite bits.
Chicken.
Yeah, but that's Busta Rhymes.
No, it's not. It's Charlie.
That's Charlie. Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown.
Who's that Brown?
I thought it was Charlie Black because that's like a reggae dude, but I was like, that's not right.
No, there you go.
We sampled him saying that.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, really?
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Well, that's excellent.
Yeah, good.
So you wait for verses like that, but then there's certain verses you just, because the posse cuts are too long. Like, Money, Power, Respect, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I want to listen for DMX, but he's all the way at the end.
Yeah.
There's always one guy who's not good, but it's like endearing that the rapper threw his bad rapping friend on the track.
Yeah.
That's like my dude who does the best verse on the posse cuts.
But you can do it. It's like in comedy gigs where the less good person is on in the middle because they're buffered by good acts. And it's the same in the kind of the posse cut where they're like, I'll just put him on in the middle. It'll be all right. Yeah. Everyone will just let it go. That's when they can have a cup of tea or whatever.
Yeah. No, I feel that. Well, you've done a lot of... like you've done well, not posse cuts as such, but you've done loads of fucking records with, like, you know, people that people forget that you've collabed with.
Yeah, I guess rap is mad collaborative though, right?
More yeah,
than other genres in a sense, right?
Because I remember when you stayed here last year, and like, and we were just chatting, and we were just like playing through some stuff, and then you're like, oh yeah, that's my song with Childish Gambino.
Yeah,
it's like, oh yeah, yeah. There's a video too. And I was like, oh, all right. So you've done a song with fucking Donald Glover. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Made two songs together. One was over email and one was in person. And it was cool. His brother was there too, who's been like, who writes on his show, Atlanta.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
And it was just cool. It was just quite, I like this, hanging out with two brothers. And, you know, it was dope.
Factual.
Yeah. Bringing it back.
Nice. Yeah. Full circle.
Yeah. That's. I mean, you see, he's just fucking hilarious. Like, did you ever watch Community?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, see, I just love that shit, man.
He's going to be in the next Star Wars. He's going to be young Lando Calrissian.
Yeah, I heard that. It's
a great choice.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to doubly watch Star Wars now.
Yeah, that's two people that... Actually, it's cool. They both
three.
Are...
Oh, no,
they're
can't say
but they're both rappers and actors who, you know, are pretty smart and creative and use their platform.
So tell me what's going on with Comedy Club for Kids, cause, or at least explain it first for people that don't know. So obviously, you know, this is for the idiots who don't know. You're a fucking amazing and very successful stand-up comedian who not only does like incredible political stuff it's alongside with your podcast, which I want to talk about in a bit, but then you also do Comedy Club for Kids.
I think that's the nicest thing you've ever said to me. It'll be different at Christmas.
You're the shittest out of
That's my fucking roast potato. So Comedy Club for Kids is a stand-up comedy gig, but for kids 6+ and their families. So all the stand-up is suitable for them. But I'd still say at times it's quite... on edge of what you can do for like within safe parameters. Mm-hmm. But we've got certain acts that do it who push it as far as they can. And that's why people like coming to it, because parents come and they're not just bored yeah. of bringing their kid to some sort of like Plinky Plink and the Red Sock adventure or whatever. They
sounds
get to come.
Amazing.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. I've just made that up. I'm going to jot it down after great. This.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so it's. It, I mean, that's amazing. We did like 185 shows around the UK last year, and earned profit
did
in
you do
Edinburgh
all of them?
This year. No, God, no, I didn't do all of them. We did South Bank Centre on Sunday for the first time, and not in the main Royal Festival Hall one day. But yeah, it's just growing and growing and growing. We've got some amazing acts that are doing it, so it's working out what to do. We've got this big Comedy Club for Kids Christmas Cracker. That is a special Ooh. Christmas show we're doing all December. Myself, Howard Reed, and Beck Hill.
Oh, I'm coming to that.
I'll tell you now, one of the main jokes is, what's your favourite Christmas carol? Well, it was 1986, and my name isn't Carol. We do that. that's happening about six times. That's happening about six times in the show.
That's great.
So, there's going to be a bit where we hand out Christmas crackers to everyone, but they're Jacob's crackers. Yeah, it's that sort of bullshit because children like it.
Hey,
we like it. It's
I like
funny.
It. That's fucking brilliant.
There is Howard Reed at the moment, who's Howard Reed's amazing. If you don't know him, he's like a stand-up who he used to perform with an animated boy called Little Howard that he did live, and he controls it like using a clicker, but he's got an Xbox controller so he can make Little Howard perform by himself. It's incredible. But at the moment in his kids set, he does a thing called Fart Psychic where he tells all the children he can predict their futures and read their thoughts by pulling their finger. And he goes around the audience, pulls their finger, presses his clicker, and it plays a fart sound, and then he reads their fart. And I swear, I've seen it about 40 times now, and I still cry laughing. It's just because that's the thing, kids have got no kids don't care. They're like, well, they love really intelligent stuff, but they also just go farts, poo, hilarious, and then they laugh for days.
I think those things, farts, poo, hilarious,
they're still
those
funny.
Are logic,
yeah,
yeah,
still
yeah those
funny.
Are
absolutely. But I think a lot of grown ups kind of go, oh, that's very childish humor. And you're like, you want to laugh, you dick.
Over in America, we still rate farts, poo, and all that stuff, man.
You rate them,
yeah.
All right, yeah, not official, not like a ratemypoo.com.
No, that's
thing,
slang,
right?
Isn't it?
Yeah, no, he's getting in with the, slang.
Right, no, it's right. I just suddenly worried that for a minute that you were talking about a specific fart rating site.
I threw in different.
It was good.
Yeah,
and no, I enjoyed it.
Thanks.
What's because like sorry first I want to say what are some of the guests that you have on Comedy Club, because you said you had a lot of great like special guest comedians come down and enjoy it that might only previously do like adult kind of scenarios for their comedy.
And has anyone accidentally cursed ever?
Oh yeah we've had some. Well, no, we haven't had too many over the years, but we've had a few bad ones. Yeah, really bad one. Let me tell you the worst one for the sake of podcast. Worst one ever was Joel Dommett, who's now doing quite well. Yeah. And he's on his comedian's on TV quite a lot now. And this is the worst thing that anyone's ever said, right? Mm. Camp Bestival, audience about 800 people in a tent. He decides, let's make what was that transformer, like Constructicon or whatever, where it's all made of different parts. And he's like, let's get kids up, we'll make a giant Constructicon. Mm. So he gets a kid to grab each of his legs, one to grab his arms, one to jump on his back, and as they're doing that into the mic he goes, oh, it'd be awkward if I got an erection now, thanks Joel. 800 people, luckily no one complained because it was a festival. Joel has never been booked by us again. I love Joel, never booked him again. Generally though, most of the acts, once had Ian Sterling, who does it at CBBC, he swore on stage by accident. He said something like, that's fucking great. And he was so embarrassed that he called up his mum and his mum told him off down the phone in front of the audience.
Amazing.
And the kids thought that was amazing.
Good comeback.
Adam Hills years ago had a thing where he would get people's soft toys they brought with them and he'd make them fight and create personalities for them. And this kid had a little toy gorilla in like a camo like jacket.
Yeah.
And he called him like Sergeant something. And he was like, and I don't take no bullshit. And then he suddenly paused and went, oh shit, I've said shit. Oh shit, I've said shit again. Oh shit, I've said shit. And he did that for about 4 minutes. And everyone was crying laughing. We didn't, again, no complaints. It was so brilliant.
Good, good.
So, yeah, but I'd say, like, this is now suddenly remembering that people listen to this. Like, most, like, really, those are rarities. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah,
we've got one venue in the country that complains every single month regardless of what happens. This month, one of the acts had tattoos. We don't think that's suitable.
Yeah.
But other than that, it goes down pretty well, and all the acts are like, I mean, you know, there's so many acts whose material is like Like, I don't know if you've ever heard of Brendan Burns, his Aussie comic, shouty Aussie comic. So Brendan's like really, he's a really aggressive, like all his stuff is like, there's a man fucking a goat, and it's like really, but he does comedy for kids, and he uses the same personality but with like, I'm gonna hide under your bed and scare you, and they all go, yeah, it's hilarious. So like, he uses it in a different way, and it's beautiful to watch, you know, when you get someone being that inventive.
And you, because you get kids coming up and doing comedy as well, right?
Oh yeah, and some of them are terrifyingly good. There's a girl called Grace who used to be Grace the Child, but she's now 13, so she's Grace the Former Child. And she's done Edinburgh 2 years in a row, just like 4 or 5 days of 45-minute shows. Last year, she got in Telegraph's top 10 jokes of the Fringe.
What?
Had a Guardian G2 piece about her. She's 13. She's dark as fuck. Like, she's got a joke. This is a joke she wrote herself. It's all about, like, I don't understand why Russia is so homophobic when the Trans-Siberia Express runs through it. Like, that's clever. How clever is that? She wrote that when she was 12.
Wow.
Brilliant. Yeah, so we've got loads of kids at the moment that are doing really well. Yeah, yeah.
That's dope. I think kids say some of the funniest, like, most surreal things and just pair words together the way, human adults don't.
Because they're basically,
so I try to steal thoughts from kids, like steal kids' material all the time. I like hang out with my nieces just so I could steal jokes and rap from them. It's great because they'll be like, I want to make a castle made out of water at the beach, and then you use that in a poem.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Kids say the darndest things. I guess is essentially what I'm saying. Yeah,
is the sort of unfiltered, isn't it? Like, the kid once shouted at me, like, today I bit a zombie, and you're like, wow, like, where's that come from? You know, just that weird looking at it from the.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is with that is like the kids' gigs. If we have an act on who's really surreal, there's like a really really good comedian doing well at the moment. He's really surreal. He doesn't work for kids because they're just like, yeah, I thought of that already.
Yeah. Oh, really?
That's weird.
That's mad interesting. Yeah. That's, yeah. All right.
They prefer it when there's an adult being a dick. Like, that's funnier to them than an adult being on there. It's really strange.
Oh, weird. So what, like, they just think, well, that's where my mind has gone. So you're not teaching me anything new right now.
Well, that's it. They're not surprised by it.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, I'll give you an example. The actor Tony Law, who's brilliant. Like, I love Tony. He's amazing. But he used to have a whole routine about getting a bear to fight a shark, and how you'd set it up and you'd paint the shark to look like a salmon and put it in a paddling pool and you convince the bear. It's really funny. But he was doing this to kids, and the kids are just like, yep, yeah. Whereas adults would be crying because it's like, this man's being ridiculous.
Yeah.
Kids are just like, yeah, of course you would. Why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you have a bear?
And saw then, that coming.
Yeah, it's really strange.
Do you see a lot of stand up in America?
I see stand up.
Because you're friends with a lot of stand up comedians. Even like when I DJ'd for you in Queens at Queens Museum, and there was a few of your friends that are like quite well known stand up comedians.
You had Hannibal in one of your videos, didn't you? Hannibal Buress.
Yeah. I had Hannibal and Eric in a video about skin lightening. Right? It was about skin lightening creams and like an exotic Indian guru selling skin lightening creams to Eric to make him lighter. And then like his girlfriend ends up with Hannibal, who's, well, darker than Eric, and that was it. You know, I think making music that kind of had humor in it, and the other thing is, I know another pair of friends who are a musician and an older brother that does comedy, and that's Hari Kundabolu and Ashok Kundabolu, who was in That's Racist.
Right.
So just through Ashok and Hari and just kind of UCB and making jokes and rap and having a part of the same kind of time where, you know, comedians started, playing like music festivals, and a lot of comedians like Aziz were constantly like writing, like that sketch he has about Pitchfork, and just so comedy and rap, I feel like, or music, indie music, independent music, and comedy started kind of occupying a similar space or community, if you will, in the States in the last like 10 years.
Yeah,
I'd say more than ever.
Because I love that, even over here where we've had, I went to see Ramesh Raghunathan, with his show with Michael Payne, and Ramesh uses one of Michael's songs to come out to at his show at the Apollo, and obviously Frankie Boyle uses one of Trim's songs to come out to at one of his shows as well. And I think I always like that when like the those worlds interconnect somehow, because they are so intertwined.
You're still writing, and I mean, I don't know, it's about a certain way of looking at the world. And yeah, I think, you know, I'd say I know a lot of musicians who are pretty funny. And I know, actually, like Reggie Watts is a good example of a musician who's also a comedian who kind of pulls both off. And
he's amazing, Reggie, yeah.
Yeah, or Joe Mandy even put his album out as a mixtape. I put it out on my label, but that's plug. But it was cool because it was, he had like sketches and like interludes that were from rap albums. So there is this hyper awareness, I think, of each world, you know, as far as this, like comedians and musicians in the States.
Yeah, and have you worked with Reggie Watts before?
I was in a film with him called Creative Control, where I played like an ad guy who was constantly hungover, and Reggie was like the cool influencer we gave these AR glasses to, and it's like a future ad hipster kind of dark comedy type of thing.
Sick.
Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah.
So it's basically just all of the comedians that are now like fucking killing it in the States, like at some point you've had them in a video or you've been in a film with them.
I wouldn't say that, but...
All of them.
Yeah, all of them.
All of them. Yeah. And do you rate Aziz Ansari?
Yeah, I think he's great. I think he's doing really cool work. Yeah. And he's also like using his platform to talk about race and stuff. And I've always thought he was a funny dude.
Yeah. You know? And are you...
He likes the movie Hitch as well. Okay. I used to be upset at him because he would constantly tweet about Hitch. And I know that Joe Mandy had a joke about Hitch where he was talking about who the hell rides like jet skis in like the Hudson River or something like that.
That's a really good point.
And I was like a little angry because I was like, there can't be two dudes who are brown who make Hitch jokes constantly. Like this is, that was the only time I felt like threatened by Aziz Ansari. Like, you know, because early on, there weren't a lot of brown dudes. So it was the idea, like, you go to a party and there's another brown dude and you got to be like, hey, man, that's me tonight. I think you should go. You should go. And the party for me was just a room of people talking about Hitch.
what I wanted to ask you, what other rom-coms do you like? Because I'm a fucking rom-com guy, so I'm into this.
I don't mind like 10 Things I Hate About You or the other one I confuse it with, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Yeah.
They're not the same film.
No.
Right. Oh, wow. I don't know which one I've seen then.
10 Things I Hate About You has like Heath Ledger and Julia Stiles and is a bit of a Shakespearean take on like young people in love in America,
right?
If you will. And How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, of course,
it's Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger. Shakespearean take.
Exactly. It's the same exact movie but with Matthew McConaughey and Kate Hudson.
Oh wow, because they did, and they've done a
few. They did Failure to Launch.
Isn't
just
Sarah Jessica Parker Failure to Launch?
No. Oh, was it? Maybe you're right.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, all white people look alike to me.
Well, it's not just to you, it's just factual information.
Yeah.
I always think that about Game of Thrones, when like there's just a bunch of old white dudes like in armor, and then one of them dies, and then the next scene he's in it again as someone else.
Yeah.
I'm like,
it's how you save money on actors, isn't it?
Yeah. Genuinely, there's 18 people in Game of Thrones that are exactly the same old white man.
But that's what actually happened in medieval times as well.
Oh, really?
it was just the same 18 guys just kept getting killed in different wars.
Exactly, coming back
and
with a slightly
different... hats and be like, are you King Harold? No. King Harold didn't have this moustache. And then be like, it's basically, it's why all the tapestries look the same, isn't it? They all look the same on tapestries, paintings. That
and
shit.
That's the only reason why they cloned them, to make the tapestries easier.
Absolutely.
So yeah, to paint, to save money on paint. Absolutely. That is, you know what? That reminds me of my favorite bit that I believe is your favorite bit as well of Muppets in Manhattan.
Oh man.
Yeah, you must have seen Muppets in Manhattan.
No.
Oh, come on, man. You need to watch that.
It's got a romantic comedy. I mean, there's always the Kermit Piggy romance.
Yeah.
So you might like that.
Yeah.
It's very very romantic. But there's a great scene, Nahims, that you would love in this film where
you're now going to spoil it for him.
Well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Where Kermit and Fozzie Bear are walking through Central Park, And
I think you need to preempt this by saying that in the film they're brothers.
They're brothers. Right? They're brothers.
They're brothers.
Right?
And one's a bear, one's a frog, but they're brothers. And occasionally they look at a picture of their dad, who's like a green bear with frog eyes.
Okay.
And that's like a running joke throughout.
It's so good for a kids' film. So they're walking through Central Park, and Fozzie's wearing a hat. This is important. Yeah. And this guy comes up, and I don't know how it comes about, but they're talking about how, like, oh yeah, yeah, no, we're brothers. And they're like, no, you're not brothers. Like, you look nothing alike. And then Kermit goes, oh, wait a second. And he gets out a hat, like Fozzie's, puts it on. And then the guy goes, see it now.
There's a bit where Kermit's crying on a bench in a park, and a little girl walks past and goes, look, mum, a bear. And the mum goes, no, honey, bears wear hats. It's beautiful. So beautiful.
That's really nice.
Yeah, brilliant.
Oh fuck! I like the new Muppets film as well, but I loved all of them.
I like all of them. The new series was great, and then they said it was too negative. They had to change the showrunner because it was too
too many guns.
Yeah, too much guns. That's it.
Too many guns.
Well, bear arms, I suppose. There's loads of bear arms. Sure, it works, doesn't it?
Right, the right to bear arms.
Yeah, the right to bear arms. Yeah.
Yeah, for real.
We need those in the Muppets.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, so tell me about the podcast.
Oh yeah, the one that I use your music on all the time and keep forgetting to credit you for. I realised that earlier today. I was like, I should just thank you at the end of every episode.
Oh, it's fine.
So it's called The Partly Political Broadcast. It's doing all right. It's funny, and I don't know if you find this podcast. Do you podcast teams? Have you got a?
Do I do a podcast?
Do you podcast? Are you a podcaster with all your many? I know you do like hundreds of things, so I didn't know if you added that to your.
No, I haven't. This kid's too off to. It's a long story. I don't.
Oh man! All right. I feel like I've accidentally hit a nerve that I didn't mean to hit there.
No,
don't talk to me about podcasts.
God, no.
You know you're on a podcast now, right?
Yeah.
What?
I feel very strange.
Oh man, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Yeah,
you've triggered me by reminding me I'm on a podcast. Podcasts are very sensitive topic.
Is this like when they used to trick Mr. T how to get on planes? Is this what we've done in a podcast? Like,
yeah,
actually,
this isn't a podcast.
Well, I was just asleep on the couch, like I have been for like 3 days, and then I wake up and there's a podcast I'm talking.
Literally, that is how it happened this morning. I woke up at 12. We were supposed to start recording at 12. I walk in and go, I need a shower. And he's like, I need to, can I sleep for 10 more minutes?
Yeah.
Brilliant. And at 12, I was outside your door.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And why won't anyone let me in?
Because we're rap guys.
Thanks. Thanks, everyone.
No, I don't have a podcast, but I enjoy them sometimes. But I also just like listen to the same like two albums every 3 months instead of like, but once somebody described podcasts to me as like, well, because, you know, I was saying how like my impression of white people is kind of like, well, podcast. And my friend
yoga.
Was like, but yeah, yoga. And then my producer, Radinia, was like, no, they're great. They're like awesome, like Lonely Man in the City Tool. And I was like, oh, maybe I do like podcasts.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's the long story. That's right. All. So tell us about your podcast.
No, but I was going to say, as well, the other thing is, like, this is unfiltered. You can put your own content out. Because Harry Condabo's got one with W. Cammy Bell,
yeah,
hasn't he? The new, what's it called? Politically Reactive. I think it's really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, so mine is just, it's partly political broadcast. It is me being satirical about the previous week's news, but also every week I'm trying to get someone that genuinely knows about stuff. So I've had some good guests. I've had someone from like Campaign Against the Arms Trade talking about how we sell all our weapons to Saudi Arabia to kill people in Yemen with. People, somebody like who I thought, this subject sounds really boring, but it's about, they want to ban, this person wanted to ban driven grouse shooting, which to me means nothing. I've grown up in the city, but this simple, really elitist sport, it turns out is causing them to burn all this land, which means it's got no drainage, which means everywhere's getting flooded beneath it every winter, and at the same time it's killing all these wild birds, basically destroying our ecosystem. So I'm trying to get people on to be interesting about stuff, and in the meantime I tell terrible jokes, have crap jingles, but I mean, what's really interesting is I've been doing it now since February, just as a kind of, we did some filmed ones a couple of years ago, my friend Ben Hilton And that was a lot of time and effort to film something every single week. So we started him as audio. But like the amount of gigs just this year was in, was, 3 weeks ago, was in Liverpool and Manchester with Beck Hill doing some double header shows. People turned up because of the podcast, like a good amount of people. People turned up to the show in Barnsley because of the podcast. Did the QED Skeptics Conference a couple weeks ago. People were there because of the, like, all people came up to me saying, we all listen to podcasts. So it's working, which is really nice.
Good.
And you're, yeah, it's all your beats that provide all the bits I talk over and the intro music.
Great.
Yeah.
That's what does it. It's not all it's of the great content that. At
no,
all.
It's absolutely. It's, your
all of, it's all of the beats.
Absolutely.
No, it's great that like to be speaking on it. It's like the same with your music. You know, you it's a, you know, I say this every podcast with whatever guests that I have on, that it's just so important with a platform to be speaking about it. You know, it's a wasted platform otherwise. And like, you know, even though this podcast isn't strictly political, is there's always politics in it, just the same way that there's always something, you know, discussing music or Muppets in every episode as well. But you know, like, and I think it's just as important, you know what I mean, to kind of have that.
But is there, I mean, also, because there's a thing like with music, like you get to be, you can be really angry, you can be kind of fun, like it's I don't know, like I find in with comedy at the moment, the world's so fucking stupid that to make jokes about it is becoming harder. You're like,
yeah, well, you know. I had that where like I used to think about humor more while making rap and like I didn't have any problem with it. But then as things got like more and more shit over the last like 2 years, it came to a point where it's like, how can I really be humorous about this? And, you know, just a general aversion to being too serious about anything. How do I balance that with something that is quite serious? And like, as far as like around when Black Lives Matter started taking off, and you know, race finally became something that was in the larger dialogue again in America, it was a pretty crazy time, and I started kind of feeling like, man, as far as my work goes, like I shouldn't be making light or even laughing to keep from crying while talking about what essentially is people dying every day and stuff like that. So it became kind of hard to be humorous, but then
you don't make light of it, like, you know, like
I don't even think of it as being humorous. It's no. Mostly other people that talk about it as being humorous, yeah. And then I kind of am like, well, I wasn't really being funny. That's just
But there's always like, it's where you're aiming it at, because like you can be commenting on the subject without aiming it at the victims. Do you know what I mean? Like there's that.
Well, I mean, also just like if politics is in your life and your work is often your life, like you are your work and stuff, then you put politics in your work, and it's not like a mission statement or a natural thing. Sometimes it's not even using the platform you have to for a cause, but it's just a natural, organic type of thing based on the person you are, right? And I think that happens.
Yeah, definitely. There's been I don't know if you, so it would have been, when did you get here? You came here on Monday, didn't you? Flew over.
Yeah, Monday.
Yeah, so last week we had a big thing here with Lily Allen, did this big, she went to the refugee camp in Calais and spoke out and did this thing, and all the papers just trashed her, being compassionate, lovey, and all, how dare she.
How dare she be compassionate?
How dare she actually care about things and want to help people? That's disgusting. And like, what, there was a lovely interview with her where I think the reviewer was just going, would you put them in your house though? Would you like, would you know, you're all taught, but would you put them in your £1 million home? And she was like, yeah, but I can't legally yet because of the government. I'd happily take them in. And then the report was like, oh, I didn't expect you to actually say that. But like, I was watching that thinking, it's so important that artists speak out. Like, if people that have got a voice, that have got an audience to say stuff, aren't allowed to say it or are trash for saying it, then no one's got a voice. Like, where are you gonna? There was I can't remember, Corey, were you there when we saw Harry Belafonte at the staff
band? Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. We took our mum for her birthday and he did a Q&A. And it was like one of those inspirational days. And one of the lovely things, I remember somebody asking him about the arts being cut here, all the funding. And he just said, arts is the gateway to truth. Yeah. That's what he said. He said it's how other people interpret the world is through arts. And that's why you've got to let art be unfiltered. And I think that's totally true. But I think, sadly, it is hugely filtered all the time on television stuff. But I think music and podcasts and comedy and that is still, you can still
like
get away with it.
Taking the platform
say.
Back, like reclaiming the narrative or telling the stories you want to tell, instead of like TV often where you have to tell the stories that appeal to a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
And that's like, it's harder to, everyone could just make music in their bedroom and then it's in like, it's an album. And I find like music is a cool medium to use for that specifically. You get a lot more leeway and you get to really pound it in if you want, you know.
Well, so I guess your audience is coming to you. You're not having to cater for an audience. Right. Your audience comes to you because of what you make.
Yeah,
you know?
No, that's why I do think podcasts are cool, because it's been a lot of like really interesting people just getting a platform to talk about the things they want. That's
yeah.
Cool.
And what, so do you find that, like, say with your last album, Eat, Pray, Fug, that came out last year, beginning of last year, and you had a lot of very, very political records on there as well, and that are dope. And when I DJed for you last year, it was really nice to see so many people that knew all the lyrics and, like, you know, not related to them as such, but, like, felt them. Do you find that it's that those songs had politicized people, or that they were already on that wavelength?
Ah, man, all right, bringing the heat today.
That's right.
All right. No, I mean, I kind of just tell my story and can't ever believe anyone listens. And then when you find that people do listen, I guess the idea of being like an outsider in a sense is something that is like relatable to a lot more people than like I've had waves of different types of, I'd say like these days, a lot more South Asians in the crowd than like before in rapping, and that's really cool to see. But yeah, it's always a different crowd of people, and it's cool that, I guess, yeah, it's often said, you know, that like even when you get really specific in art, that's the best, and when it's like relatable across, you know, types of people, that's like really a good validating feeling.
But, I mean, like Flag Shopping, man, it's just, what a tune.
Yeah, and again, music is great because you get to reclaim that narrative and tell parts of the story, you know, as far as like post 9/11. And in literature, there was more like post 9/11 stuff going on than music, really. Yeah. And it has, and you know, so I think it was kind of, in some ways, trying to make like a post 9/11 album of you know, different things. It was about mental health, it was about 9/11, and it was about trying to like make sense of the world.
The new record, I mean, like T5, which is just super dope.
Yeah.
Just all about being like fucked up at the airport, pretty much, by a fucking airport.
There's
security.
Like three songs about like airport security. Yeah. It's two brown dudes making an album, and both of us fly a lot, and it's like really just a given. It's like the only, that's what Shoes Off, that song is about. It's like, I'm prone to like taking my shoes off at home and like at the religious temple, but the only other place is the airport, which is not like for me a place of like peace and like, you know, solitude and like reflection. It's just like you are put in a box, you are told who you are, but typically when my shoes are off, it means like I know who I am and I'm comfortable, or I'm at the temple.
Have you thought about like turning up to checkouts in like pajamas, take your shoes off, you're like, oh, you know, stretch,
yeah, no,
have a cup of cocoa, just be like,
yeah, I'm pretty comfortable. I take them out even before I come in, just right on the sidewalk. Yeah, I'm just ready to go.
I always worry about when it's right time to take my belt off, because if you take it off too early, you're a bit creepy.
Yeah.
But if you take it off too late, then you get in trouble. Yeah. So it's tricky.
I had that in the airport the other day. It was like I stood there next to like a family, and then I was like, I've got to take my belt off. This is creepy.
No, the rule, I think, is within 5 feet of the belt. Of the belt, as in the luggage, the chair.
Right, within 5 feet.
Yeah, I would say.
It's the last thing to come off. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think I think around and, 5 feet.
Your underwire pants.
Yeah. You take off everything else. Yeah. Take off your protective human skin.
As a brown man, I just show up naked and just ready to get the anal cavity search, which is odd for other people. They don't know, but I'm just trying to get on the flight as quickly as I can. So just make
it must get so annoying, though. Like, are you just sick of it, or have you just now... Because you sound like you've got quite, like, I just have to deal with this, get through it easy.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Yeah, I've had to talk about it a lot because of this album. Sure. Definitely have. But it is, like, it is what it is at a point. I mean, it's also the people who are doing it are also, off, like, the TSA agents are often, like, people of color. And Riz talks about here, like, you know, they're people from Hounslow, and they all, like, they know his work because he's British and this prominent figure who's Asian. And so it's, like, the guy searching you down being like, hey, I saw you in that film the other day. It was really good.
Yeah.
Or both Riz and I, like, we have music that's on flights. Like, you could, or you could watch The Night Of on a flight, and you could listen to Eat, Pray, Thug on a Delta flight. And it's, like, we have to go through this pain in the ass of, like, you know, quite a discriminatory story experience. And then you get on the plane and you're like, yo, I got on the plane. I'm here. Oh, I'm here. Like,
I'm on the plane.
Like, so I saw his tweet a picture of, like, he did a search while there was a magazine with his face on it. Next
He had the whole front cover.
Yeah.
Crazy.
So it's kind of a crazy experience. Yeah.
That's ridiculous, man. Because he literally he was on the front cover of that magazine for something or another. And they, was it a Virgin flight or something like that? And he's still got searched.
Yeah, that's the search I've been on. That's the search where they get you into the gate and everyone's basically seated and there's a table with one person. You take all your stuff out and they search it. Mm. There's a bunch of different types of search.
What's your favorite?
Definitely the butt touching one. That's right, the best. Sure. Yeah. The pat down. I always opt for the pat down. You don't have to go through that machine that, like, gives you radio waves and shit.
That's weird.
But then they have to touch you up. So I always
machine, they can see if you fart, like, because it's heat and it. Yeah.
Really?
That's what I've heard. Yeah.
Oh my god! I got to try that.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Now challenge. Yeah, I'll do this.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah, I'm gonna do this.
Challenge accepted. It's gonna save him up.
Gotta make you have to do things to get your mind off of the discrimination. So now I'm gonna fart in the radio wave chamber. Thank you.
And also, you kind of Dutch oven it at the same time because it's quite a small enclosed area. So the next person that comes in,
man.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah.
Or even better, do a fart and then go, "Hey, sorry, I think there's a malfunction in here. You're gonna have to come and check the machine."
Into it, although they might have seen it if they can see it. All right, so good point. They might not.
Yeah. But who watch? Because that scan goes off somewhere. Who's looking at?
Oh,
that?
They see it right there. You have to, like, you go through the scan. You wait. You walk, like, within 3 feet. Somebody stops you. Then they look at the machine based on what comes up from the scan. They pat you up. You end up getting patted up again so often it doesn't even make sense.
Exactly.
And then they let you go further once they get the scan in and look at it, and so they see it right there. But there's definitely some dude somewhere and, like, jerking off to it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I'd say obviously I don't have it happen to me very often, but because I've got a diabetic pump, because I'm diabetic, and that makes me avoid a lot of scans because I just go, well, I can't take this off, and then they have to pat me down instead. So get yourself, like, some sort of illness or injury that.
All right, I'm working
you
on
have
it.
To have a, yeah.
I'm constantly working on it, just
a metal leg. So that'll be a perfect time for the annual Thanks for Trying podcast tradition of a piss break, and then we'll be right back for a twist on the shot. Welcome back to the Thanks for Trying podcast post piss break. And one thing I haven't actually mentioned yet is that it's a bit of a different scenario for the Thanks for Trying podcast, because for the first time ever, there's two things that are different. One, it's not at nighttime. It's the middle of the day. It's beautiful and sunny outside in Stoke Newington. And two, we're not drinking alcohol. So the shot break today is something very different. So I'm on a bit of a health kick at the moment, you know, for fucking going to gym, you know, doing all that stuff. Yeah, impressed I am. So today what I've done is I've made a special shot out of ginger, turmeric, lemon, and a few other bits and bobs in there that I'll let you guys decide once we cheers.
All right.
Santé. Cheers. All that stuff.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
I got quite the kick.
Oh, yeah, that's spicy. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
Woo! You see, I like that in being healthy and avoiding alcohol, me, your diabetic brother that you've known as diabetic since you were born, you've put sugary apple juice in there.
Oh, yeah, too right.
Yeah, so you fucked me up in some other way. That's a really loving thing that you did there.
Probably more fucked up than sneaky. A shot of tequila.
Absolutely, yeah, because tequila would raise and lower my sugars, whereas this... It's just going to raise my sugars. That's why I've done the heat sleep for it.
You're an asshole.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah.
There's cayenne in there. There's turmeric. There's a little bit of cider vinegar in there as well.
I mean, I'm definitely awake.
You know what? I've found that doing these shots like once a day wakes me up more than coffee does.
You got to put me on the program. So how do you make these? I started getting a little into smoothies at home, but this seems...
great. It's so good. It's literally all it is. I usually do fresh apples, but today it's a bit of apple juice. So it's apples, a whole lemon, turmeric, fuckloads of ginger, cayenne pepper and vinegar.
How much turmeric are we talking about here?
I mean, I put in quite a bit. You can see it's quite yellow in its coloration.
The first thing is,
but it's good. It's so good, man. It always
like a tablespoon,
it means,
like a teaspoon.
I just fucking dash it in, man.
Oh yeah,
I do it the rap way.
Yeah, it's tough.
Throw it all in. Yeah.
It's become like the big, like the turmeric latte or whatever. I was like, what the fuck is that? And then it's really good. That's been like the new hipster.
I know, and they stole them. They stole that from an Indian thing, right?
Are white people stealing turmeric from us again?
Yeah.
Didn't work out well for us the last time.
Well, because they called it what, golden? No, what is it? Golden milk or something?
It's called colonialism.
Steal the culture.
Yeah, that's what they did. They start with the spice, and then just it's a slippery slope of spice from there, from spice.
And now you've got fucking pumpkin spice lattes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The nectar of the white girl.
So tell me about this turmeric craze that all the kids are getting busy with.
Well, I don't, I mean,
on
I,
the
it's,
streets.
It's the new thing I've noticed in wanky like coffee shops around here. That seems to be like a, I think it's like a, just a turmeric latte or whatever, yeah. Which is just, I think, milk and shitloads of turmeric. But it tasted, I had one because despite golden being milk. Begrudging and angry about the fucking wanky thing, I'll still try one. I still got to know if it's all right.
I just tried one. I got forced into it and it was all right.
Right.
It's all right.
That's the problem is I like to rally against these shitty fashion trends and things, but then I'll always try one and go, it's actually quite good though.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair play everyone.
It's like stereotypes. Like they're a reason they're stereotypes. There's a reason it's a trend, right?
Yeah, like, yeah.
True.
That's it. That's
like
it.
Kale. Kale died, man. Kale's back to where it was before is...
But yeah, because like eating lots of it is actually
so now
quite
I like kale.
You,
like, huh? Now I like kale.
Now I'm into kale.
So I'm so into kale.
Yeah, so I was always into kale, even when our dad used to make kale and I hated it, that I was still into it, you know? I was back in the day kale, you know?
Yeah, old school kale. Yeah, original kale.
Yeah. OG kale crew, man.
OG
like,
kale, yeah.
And then it became popular and I was like, well...
mainstream, yeah. But there'll be an underground kale scene going on right now.
I hope so, man.
There's going to be some people like...
I'm leading the charge.
Yeah. I had to get into charred when people were into kale, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, for example, I make a mean kale sag paneer. You know?
Oh shit!
Yeah, I'm trying to ethnic up kale now that the white people have left. That's when we'll ethnic it up.
So is that have you got rid of the spinach or is there still like is it
no,
kale
it's
and
just,
spinach?
It's just kale.
Shit!
It's a kale sag.
Man.
Yeah, yeah. Poor this spinach. Is just one of my little things, you know.
Because you make a lamb as well. That I'm really excited because I'm
trying to make.
All right, okay. You like a lamb dish. You don't just make a lamb.
I give birth to lamb.
Yeah, right. Sure.
All the time.
Of course.
And I still really need to try that.
Yeah, I'm trying on Friday to cook a little.
We got a recording session on Friday. That whenever you're hearing this, it would have happened already. So you'll know whether or not it was successful or not.
This is one of the spaces I feel comfortable rapping in, sleeping in, hanging out, waking up and stumbling into microphones.
It's true. Last year, I told you the other day that I was going to mention this. Last year when we were recording, we did what like 5 songs in one day, and. You don't write stuff down.
Last like year, I don't really write. You know, like year and a half.
It's insane. You just like kind of go up to the mic and then you just rap, and it's like I don't know where it's coming from, but you know it's all coherent and it's sick.
I drink a lot of white wine when I'm in London for some reason.
There's a lot of white wine and it happened. We did 5 songs and none of it was written down, and it was sick. Except for one point when you had a bit of paper and you'd written something on it, and I was like, "Heems, man, like what have you written on this paper? Have you written down lyrics?" You say you never write down lyrics, man. I'm calling you out. And he was quite drunk at the time, and he showed me the paper, and it was just a bunch of diagrams. And he was rapping from the diagrams.
But that's what Young Thug.
Wow.
I read an article that Young Thug does that, and I was like, let's see if this like really works. And so I wanted to do that. Yeah.
That's not how does it, what sort of diagrams are they? Like Venn diagram. You got like 2 subjects.
No, they'll
and
often
then,
be like words. There'll be words. There's some words in the diagram. Right?
Yeah.
There'll be like a bunch of words that I like the sound of, or that the beat might evoke these words within me, or something like this, and. Or certain feelings I'm trying to like.
There's
convey.
A lot of triangles.
And then I just draw arrows from the words to each other in like how I flow them out like line to line. And then I just fill the other words through the arrows kind of.
That sounds amazing.
That's right.
And but is it also?
It's a banger.
Is it?
I didn't
thing
remember that,
that
I did that though. That's cool.
Like thanks. Only you can. Oh, do you ever look back at them and go like, "What the fuck was that?"
I didn't realize I had done that until just like yesterday.
Cool. Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was probably a shit verse though, I bet.
Like, no, it was sick.
I don't know.
It was, I've got it somewhere. I've got the diagram sheet somewhere. I'll frame it one day.
It'll be one of those, if you play it backwards, it'll find like the lost tomb of some emperor or some shit.
Yeah, I wonder. I'm like afraid to look at it, but let's see.
One thing I wanted to talk to you about as well, that is Salman Rushdie.
Classic podcast topic.
Classic, yeah. Because you're friends with him.
I know him. I hang out with him occasionally, or I have.
Tell me the story then. Because I know Tina will have questions.
I've definitely already got questions.
I was doing an event with the Asian American Writers Workshop, and it was like kind of honoring him. And so Zadie Smith and Jonathan Safran Foer and someone else had read his work out loud. And then afterwards, there was like a dinner with a bunch of people, and I played like 70s like Bollywood like songs and hung out. But we had also initially just reached out. I kind of tweeted at him essentially, and he responded, and we had this exchange. And I think his son maybe was a fan that put him on. And so after that, I went and had a drink with him, and have kind of just like emailed him and stuff. And I had dinner with him recently with Riz and a bunch of people, just like on one of the debate nights, like just a bunch of brown people drinking and eating. Before the debate, because it's sad times in America. And he's been really cool and helpful, and like, you know, wow. Open to like, as somebody who wants to eventually write a novel, like, I feel like he's been super kind in a sense, and been like, you know, feel free to like hit me up and let me know what you're working on. And
that's amazing.
Yeah,
God, that is amazing. And what's he like? Is he
Man,
he sounds very nice, but I just sort of imagine that he constantly spews kind of quite interesting philosophies. Well, actually,
the first time we hung out in New York, like, he was super charming and just like, you know, very smart, clearly. But just, yeah, super charming, super good at talking and hanging out. And I haven't really spoken. Unfortunately, the last time I was in London, I seemed to have not. I kind of like stood him up for lunch once, and
stood up Salman Rushdie.
Yeah, and then,
amazing.
Yeah, and then, but now
you're still asleep here, like hungover.
Probably, unfortunately, and so, but more, but I hope I patch things up. I think it seems all right now.
Well, yeah, I don't think it's the worst bridge that's ever been.
Well, actually, you know, there's so
I think one or two of them.
There's so few like South Asian like writers, artists, or media people that you kind of when you get somebody like that to allow you this, you know, like relationship of picking their brains, it's super cool. Like Vijay Iyer is somebody I often consider a mentor. He's a jazz piano player in the States, and he teaches at like Harvard, got a MacArthur, and super talented, smart guy. I play with him in kind of an improv band with a guitarist and a drummer, and him on piano. And even, you know, I got to meet Sanjeev Bhaskar from Goodness Gracious Me last time I was here. So this project I'm doing with like a British rapper, a lot of it comes from this interest in the Asian scene here, and being able to watch something like Goodness Gracious Me and be like, how come we don't have this in New York? Like, what, who do we? So even sitting in New York, I would look over to London at like Asian Dub Foundation and, you know, films like East is East and My Son the Fanatic and My Beautiful Laundrette, and, you know, writers here like Salman Rushdie and Hanif Qureshi and Goodness Gracious Me, and kind of be jealous and be like, I want to do, you know. And again, that attention for like Asian art essentially moves in waves. It was definitely bigger in the 90s. There was a wave of Talvin Singh and this, you know, Fundamental and these bands and musicians, and so there's less of that now. But it's cool because this project I get to kind of fill that up, that void that I had looking at England, and try to make something like that, that, you know, crosses those borders of diaspora. And like,
yeah.
So
Yeah, it's a real shame. It's really, it's sadly, we've got a lot less of it now here than we used to, as you said. There's some good, there's some really good Asia stand-ups, South Asian stand-ups. But I mean, really, the TV is... We had an era of... we had, like, The Real McCoy, which was an Afro-Caribbean kind of sitcom, and Desmond's and things like that. And then you had Goodness Gracious Me, and you had all these different, like, really diverse in the 90s, yeah. And then sort of hit the 2000s, and TV went, oh, no, we'll just have young white guys again.
Yeah,
thanks.
Downton Abbey.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. That's it. We'll have shows where elite white people are the focus. It was really, yeah, it's really strange.
Well, like 2.4 families of fucking like white people just like fucking being in a house, and worrying about their shopping.
Race is sensitive in like England. You can't really talk about race. Even some people in America get uptight when you say white people. But as like a person of color, you're always referred to as that Indian guy. And so, but I sense, you know, in England, when you talk about race, it's just like people aren't as comfortable. It's a less common thing in discourse, you know.
Well, but is that bizarre thing where all the kind of so his commentators would go, you can't talk about race anymore. They're all the people that would then be quite racist.
Yeah.
You know, it's you know,
it's usually
yeah, there was that whole thing of like nobody's saying anything about immigration, but they were saying that 400 times a day about immigration. You know, like it's just nonsense.
Yeah.
It's the same people that are all, you know, at the moment we've got this big thing where a lot of, particularly right wing, are kind of saying, sick of these people, these overly politically correct, trying to find their safe space, trying to, you know, say what they want. And then at the same time, they're saying that they love people who say what they think, like Trump or whatever.
Yeah.
And then get angry when people disagree with them and hide in their safe space. It's just a whole world of hypocrisy.
Yeah, I think it's all like scapegoating because we're both parts of two falling empires and like people need people to blame. And so it's happening both here and over there, you know.
Double speak, isn't it? It's the 1984 thing. It's classic, you know. It's like the things that mean two things, and you can have one opinion on something, and that's completely
right.
There's
specific ways to even oppression can be spoken in politically correct terms or tricky kind of language, right? But it's clear a lot of it is just racism, and I wonder how much of it comes from also race being inserted into the conversation because of like Obama's presidency and this idea of like when people need someone to blame, blame Obama, and then how that extends to blaming minorities as a whole or, you know, immigrants as a whole. It's like things aren't working out for me. Like I said, Britain and the US are not where they used to be or are growing, and there's this anxiety about it. And so it's easier to blame the neighbor you don't know because you've all been othering them for years.
Well, it's also that, I mean, especially over here, we've had the thing where we've had a government that's caused austerity and just made hardship so much worse, made so many more people hungry and homeless. But instead of saying, we did that, they've gone, it's immigrants, there's too many people. And so everyone's amazingly lost all their memory of the crash that happened only 8 years ago and gone, oh yeah, it's them. I mean, the other thing I was going to say is, plug in yet another podcast, but been listening to the Malcolm Gladwell's Revisionist History podcast. I would highly recommend them if you get a chance. But one of them, he's talking about... a big study showed that people, you'd assume that people that vote for Obama in America would be more progressive, maybe more liberal, more open to the idea of having a black president. But it turns out a lot of people voted for Obama did that and then said, all right, we've done our one thing that proves we're not racist. Now we can be racist and are hugely racist the rest of the time in their views and opinions. And as though it's almost their get out clause. You know, so what you'd actually need is a succession of presidents who weren't white in order for it to actually make a difference.
Yeah, there is this idea of like post-racism and like, oh, well, we have a black president, so clearly we're not racist. And it's it's like using the president as your black friend to be like, no, it's cool, I have a black friend.
Yeah.
It's cool. No, I voted for the black nominee, so now I could say whatever I want, I get a pass.
When's the election? It's next week, right?
November 8th, man. I'm playing a show that night. It's going to be weird. I hope like they have TVs... or I hope they don't. Let's see.
Like, have you got a song to? Like, have you got a track that you choose to play depending on each outcome?
I mean, the whole album is pretty much a lot of like anti-Islamophobia, so I feel like it lends itself to one.
To
specific,
both candidates, well, yeah, in a way, but yeah, definitely Trump. Yeah.
So how are we feeling? Which is it going to be Trump?
No, I don't know. I haven't looked at the numbers in like since I've been here, but it doesn't look like it's going to be, and there might even be former red states that turn blue. Wow. So.
And none of it matters anyway, because she's going to be the same.
It's they're all the same essentially, but there's one that's clearly worse than the other, I think, and that's what kind of I don't specifically have anything against Hillary Clinton. I definitely supported Bernie Sanders more.
Yeah, but, of course.
But it's this whole thing has been surreal. When I came here in November before I went to India, it was, a lot of it was kind of like running away from America and this racism and Trump. Mm-hmm. And so I left in November, stayed here a month, and went to Goa for like 3 or 4 months. Came back to the States after about five and a half months, and was hoping by then this stuff will be over. And it was like, oh no, like full steam ahead. And so it's been pretty intense. And I mean, I can't wait until it's done, so I just don't have to constantly see this nonsense being like repeated in media. And all I do is just watch the news at this point. Because it is interesting, but it's
pretty. Do you think, because one of the things I think I sort of am concerned about is like, because I think you're right, I think it looks like Hillary's going to win now. Yeah. And people listening to this podcast say in 4 weeks' time,
yeah, exactly. You idiots.
And now they're dead. But with the whole Donald Trump saying, I'll only accept the outcome of this election if I win and all that. And, you know, like, is there a fear that he loses, all the people that voted for him are going to fucking riot and... You know, I worry that that's going to kick off.
It won't be seen as riots, though.
Oh, no, of course, because they're white,
No.
Polite protests with guns.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's setting it up in that way. He's been kind of the last 2 weeks talking about, like, as if he's already lost and getting people ready to kind of incite, you know, riots. And it's pretty scary. Mm. It was interesting for me that, you know, he said and has been accused of all these, you know, of assault, essentially. And that didn't, like, rattle as many Republicans, but when he potentially insulted the notion of democracy in America and the election system, and not accepting necessarily peaceful transition, that is when a lot of people were like, oh my God, you know, he's insulted democracy. But it was like, he's been insulting women, minorities, all this for ages, and that didn't really like make you question this dude. I was just like, man, that's crazy. That I can't understand that.
But I genuinely think that there's nothing he could say that would make a difference to his supporters anyway. And in the same way that, like,
he said I could shoot somebody in the back of their head on Fifth Avenue and my poll numbers wouldn't go down.
It's true. It's so true. It's the same with Theresa May. Like, there's nothing, you know, what happened. You'll know more about this than me, Tiernan, but her this week coming out with that leaked thing about her saying she didn't believe in Brexit anyway, you know, all of this, all of this stuff. No matter what happens, it doesn't matter. Like, you could, she could say anything, and people still would be Tories, and still would still be like, well, it's probably Corbyn's fault.
Yeah, but it's also all the kind of disillusionment. I think it's very much in the States, you've got a whole class of people that have felt they've been ignored for years and years and years and years. And you have over here, you've now got a lot of people that think that the only way they've got a voice is because of Brexit. Mm. Even if Brexit isn't going to help them in any way, it's going to make their lives much, much worse. They all kind of go, well, somebody listened to us. We got what we wanted. So now it has to happen. Otherwise, it's just... And I agree with that. You know, even as someone that wanted to remain, I think if you don't follow through with the vote, then you are taking the piss out of our crappy democracy anyway. That you've got to... You just have to make it as best as you can. But you've got all these people saying they just want it... They're so angry that nothing's happened for them in years.
Right.
That this is the closest thing they get to having a say. I think with Trump, there are also, I mean, similar, I suppose, with Brexit, there's a number of people that were racist and weren't for other reasons. But I think there is also that, like, working class people are going, like, hang on a fucking second. We just want someone that isn't the same establishment shit that's going to side with businesses, even though Trump is a fucking business. And, you know, I mean, that is, you know, there's that whole ridiculous
thing. It's just this confusion, and, like, people have no idea. They're just like, well, you know, it's headless chickens kind of thing, you know. They don't know what they're voting for, and they don't know how to make change, and they just want to blame people and have no idea how to kind of make anything better. And yet the one person, like, say with Corbyn, who actually can make a change and wants to, you know, is a viable difference to it, they'll find any excuse to say it's wrong.
Yeah. There's I'll be really boring for a second. I went to see a panel back in May with George Monbiot on, who I'm treating as a bit of a hero at the moment. I don't know if you've heard of him. He writes for The Guardian. He's a big environmentalist, and he's written lots of books. He wrote a whole book about rewilding, which is something I think is amazing, where they reintroduce a species back into an area where it's been made extinct, and that kind of fixes the ecosystem. And there's big things like in Yellowstone Park, all the wolves were hunting guild. They put wolves back in. It caused like so many changes. It caused the river to change shape because the deer stopped grazing by the river because they could be killed, and that meant that fish came back to the river and insects came back to feed. In like 10-15 years, all these animals return. Anyway, George Monbiot was talking about we're in this age of he calls it the age of loneliness, but it's neoliberalism is the idea that everything should be competitive, everything's a competition, everything has a right to be competitive, and if you say it shouldn't be, then you're attacking freedom and democracy. That's what we're living in, and we have been since like Thatcher, Reagan, everything. And that's why they want to privatise privatise health service. I know it's already in states, but you know, and I think that's the thing. Neoliberalism doesn't work. We've had big crashes, but for it to change would require a lot of people with lots of money to lose money, and therefore they don't want it to change.
No, it'll never happen.
So we're just stuck in this shit until someone. But also, there's no good new ideas. The only ideas people have now are old ideas. So we've got like, oh, we could do, you know, communism or socialism or whatever. But they're all ideas that we need a new idea that takes the best of things, and no one's got it. I haven't got a great idea. Eggs anytime, probably.
Eggs anytime. Yeah.
You guys need me, I'll start running your country.
Please do. I'd be bang up for that. I'll help you with the campaign.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, I'll be happy with that. Eggs anytime.
No, you will. Sadiq Khan was kind of cool, but then it was like, that was also, it was tense because, people ask us with this record whether there's a line about Brexit. Riz is talking about Trump wants his exit, but if he watches like Netflix, bruv, I'm on. And so he's on it, yeah. And so, people ask us if we didn't, you know, think it was going to happen as well. I was here, and so it was more the album was kind of celebrating the Sadiq Khan moment than like the immediately what followed. And I wonder also how much that even, I guess London didn't really vote for leaving, so, but you know, it does move in these waves. It's like you elect a person of color to a prominent position, and then once that's done, you can immediately start you know, it's so.
Oh, it's all planned.
Just in terms of like drawing parallels, you know?
Yeah. It's all a chess game. It's all pre-planned, and you know, all of it, like even fucking
Illuminati, yo.
Hashtag Illuminati.
Yeah, you know.
It's true. It's painfully true. Like, it's, you know, whether it's the fact that Hillary and Trump were mates.
It's that way in the States, you get like dynasties. You've had all the Bushes, now you get all the Clintons.
Now the Clintons.
I just think that's crazy. It's like a sort of monarchy, but for.
Yeah, I mean, presidents. We have that in a lot of, in India as well. You have like the Gandhis and, these kinds of, the Bhuttos in Pakistan.
So Tiernan, that's a good time before we wrap up, because you've got a gig coming up that will be a week after this podcast comes out. So, and it's for an excellent cause that is all related to kind of what we're talking about anyway. So feel free, plug away.
Yeah, it's for the charity are called Help Refugees. They're the big one. That's essentially, it's three women that set this up a couple of years ago. During the crisis to help. Their whole thing is that they don't want particularly publicity. They don't want to make. They just want to get the money to people who need it. They're fantastic. They're a really, really good charity. And I did a gig for set up a charity gig from back in July, and so we're running this massive Help Refugees gig. It's called, very unoriginally, Stand Up for Refugees, at Conway Hall on November the 8th. And the lineup at the moment is Frankie Boyle, Sarah Pascoe, Doc Brown, previous guest, Tez Ilyas, Kerry Godleyman, Jen Brister, and me. Oh, and Richard Herring as well, who's just joined. And so that's on at Conway Hall in Holborn. We've sold there's some tickets left, but not many.
Yeah.
So check that out. And we've also, a bit of a secret one, and we're doing one in Manchester, March 24th, that has Sarah Millican and Jason Manford on.
Wow.
So it's going to be massive. So we're trying to run a few, hopefully get one in Glasgow that Frankie's sorting out for us. Just get a ton of money to them, because they're currently all in Calais at the moment trying to help all the people that have been kicked out of the camp.
Yeah.
So just for it, may as well make people laugh while getting some money.
Definitely.
Some good places.
That's a great cause. Make sure you go buy the remaining tickets of that when this comes out, and if it is sold out, travel to Manchester in March and go see that one. And also while I'm here as well, I've got, and speaking of Doc Brown, December the 18th is
going to be episode 10 of the Thanks for Trying podcast, and it is happening live at the Phoenix in central London. So make sure you go get tickets for that. And it is with the returning guests from episode 1, Doc Brown and Ed Skrine. So come down for that. It will be fucking amazing. So thank you very much to my guests today, Heems, and my brother Tin and Diab. You have been listening to episode 8 of the Thanks for Trying podcast. Big shout out to Heems and Tin for coming through. And big thank you to Seb White again for recording the show. Episode 9 will be up online very soon at some point in November. And of course, episode 10 in December will be live. So make sure you go and buy your tickets now. If you have any suggestions on who you'd like to see as a special guest on the Thanks for Trying podcast, feel free to tweet me, email in, do all that good stuff.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.